Hi, middle-aged gamers. Welcome back to another Wednesday morning, Tuesday evening full show of games, news, stories, and us telling you what we're going to play. If you're in Taiwan, you would know that Starfield is coming out in roughly 51 minutes if you are a Game Pass user. I will unfortunately not be playing then, but anyway, that's something we'll talk about later. Let's get into today's stories, and we have Adam's first story coming.
All right, so my first story is going to be that Final Fantasy 16 finally got announced some DLC. When the game originally was announced, Yoshi P, the guy who is the director of it, said it doesn't need DLC, so we don't have any plans. However, when the game came out, it was pretty much to critical success, or at least among the gamers that were playing it, really enjoyed it and were basically demanding DLC. Personally, I don't think the story needs it, but it would be very much welcome to flesh out some of the backgrounds of some of the side characters. I don't think we really need it on the main story. I think it'd be better used for fleshing out maybe, say, Cid is somebody who we see in the first half of the game and alludes to his past, but we don't quite get it. So I have a feeling that it's probably going to be focusing more on that sort of thing. But not only did they announce that we are getting two DLC packages with this, which is exciting that it's not just one, we're getting two. They said they just started development on that. But also the PC version of the game is currently under development, so that will be ready hopefully sometime soon. We do not have a current date as to when it will release, but they did assure us that it is currently being worked on. And also, if you are playing right now, the most recent patch added some new little features. The big ones are weapon skins, basically. You can transmog your weapons now, so if you have a weapon and you really enjoy the way it looks and you want your weapon to look like that, but then you know you have to equip a better one, now you can set that look that you enjoy as the skin for your weapon, so you can use that at any time, even with the stats of the higher weapons. And they've also released some new character outfits for five of the characters: Clive, Jill, Torgal, and two more, which I'm not going to name because they are spoilery, I guess, if you know who those two characters are. So yes, they do have new outfits that you can put your characters in. Not everybody, but some of them. So if you're a big Final Fantasy 16 fan, this is great news. Figured I'd share it.
I did see that news, which is really cool. To me, it seemed a bit strange. I thought DLC mandatory for pretty much every AAA game. I know indie games tend to not do DLC, but even indie games, I feel like in 2023, and maybe even starting in 2021, the last few years of games, even most games have some kind of DLC, even in like Warhammer games. They're like, okay, you have this skin or this faction or these sorts of characters and stuff. And sometimes it's not a good story. It's just every game has something extra that you can buy. And in most games, or in decent games that are not microtransactions, there's like extra things that change the look of the game if it doesn't change the way you played or the story or something. So the fact that there was no plans for Final Fantasy 16 DLC seems to me like maybe it was a lie, or maybe it wasn't planned and they were pressured by the board, the executives of Square Enix, who said, hey, this game is doing so well, we need to leech more money off people who are playing Final Fantasy 16.
I think the logic behind this was they did actually plan, not that they necessarily planned not to have DLC, but the plan was that they should make the game without DLC being necessary. One of the biggest complaints with Final Fantasy 15, Antoine will talk about this all the time, is that, oh no, it's okay, we got Antoine here in the chat. One thing that he'll always point out is that the Final Fantasy 15 story was incomplete and you needed the DLC to get a lot of these other pieces that were missing from the game. And I think that when they were making Final Fantasy 16, that was one of the things that they had to keep in mind. And they were basically just saying, hey, we want to make a complete game that DLC is not necessary for. It's not needed for. You can play the game without DLC and it'll be fine. And I think they were always open to the idea of DLC, but I think the reason they were saying there was no DLC planned from the beginning was they probably just had some ideas in the back of their mind of what they wanted to do. But it was one of those things where they were like, last time we did DLC, it backfired because people were saying, it was like that whole thing with what Antoine was saying, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago with the hamburger, where you're getting bits and pieces of it. And I think that their idea is, we want to give you the full burger this time. And if you guys are unsatisfied and you want a side of fries and you want a drink, we'll give you that. But we're going to give you the full burger this time. And so we're not planning on giving you DLC. We have ideas of what we want to do, and we'll probably do it. We want to provide you with the full experience first. And if that's what you want, then yeah, we have plans. But our plan going in isn't, oh, absolutely, we're 100%, we're going to do DLC. I think that was the idea here.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Adam. And I know we've talked about this in 2 or 3 years we've been doing this podcast, right? Is the idea of DLC. And I've told the story of the last DLC I bought was for Bioshock Infinite. I never played it. And that's the last time I'll ever buy a DLC because I know I won't play it. So given your backlog, is there any motivation for you to play any DLC?
Oh, all the time. I went back and played Burning Shores for Horizon not that long, just this year, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I remember, but like, there's so many good games. Don't you feel that pull of other games to say, okay, I want to play this instead of doing this DLC? Or is the story that compelling that you have to do it? Or is the completion aspect that compelling?
It'll depend on the game. DLCs are typically not as long as full games, so it's not the time investment that a full new game would be. You also typically start DLC at higher levels because you were whatever level you are, so that grinding aspect is typically gone. There might be some grinding for some new weapons and stuff like that, but typically DLC is probably going to be more story-focused than other things. But yeah, for me, if you're getting more story in a game you enjoy and you enjoy that game, to say, oh, I'm not going to buy DLC because I'm not going, because I have so much other stuff to play, to me, that sounds like you could use that same argument on a sequel where you're like, oh, I don't want to play the sequel. I already played the original. There's so many other new games to play. Why would I want to play the second installment of this game? To me, a DLC is the same idea where it's, oh, okay, it's new stuff. It is new stuff to play. Like, for instance, Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty is coming out this month, and I'm totally psyched for it. I really am excited to play that because I loved playing Cyberpunk and I want more Cyberpunk. But why would I want to go back to Cyberpunk and do something that I've already done when I have other games to play? That makes sense. But Phantom Liberty is something entirely new. It's an entirely new story. So yeah, to me, DLC makes as much sense to play as it would a sequel. And I'm going to play a sequel. So why would I not do DLC? Now, that doesn't always happen. I have been planning. I played Fallout 4, and I played all the DLC up until Nuka World, the last one. And I had been playing Fallout 4 so much that I was playing it as the DLC came out. So I was always really excited to play the DLC. And then I got into something else, and I was pulled out of it. And then Nuka World came out, and I bought it. And I was always planning on going back and playing it, and I never got a chance to do that. But I think that's because it just released so far away from everything else. I don't know, for whatever reason, I've never gone back to that one. But usually, yeah, I will totally go back and I will totally do a DLC run of a game. I probably won't start over from the beginning and run all the way through it again. But yeah.
Okay. I still got a lot of ammunition in the proverbial magazine to argue about this, but let's keep marching forward.
No. We got plenty of time. Antoine's not here.
Yes.
So we got extra time.
But there's lots of other stuff I imagine we can talk about and stuff that we can turn into short video. And especially, I just saw how well our Instagram is doing after, let me tell you guys, like Adam and mine's and Antoine's Instagram, in the Middle Age Gaming Instagram, had 6-7 views for months. Actually, more than a year. I used to post a short every single day when we started and nobody watched it. And now we have 300, 400, 1,700. Adam's last Armored Core short got 1,166 views, right? Combined with YouTube, combined with Facebook, 3,000 people watched Adam talk about Armored Core, which is impressive. If you're an upcoming YouTuber or content creator, keep on going, keep on trying. As much as people tell you, man, you're wasting time posting 14 videos a week, it's going to work at some point. But yeah, no, so I want us to use this session to make more content, so let's keep going.
All right.
Okay, so I have a story that actually I don't really care about Dota 2, but this is what the story is about. I love the topic, though, and the topic is about smurfing. So if you probably saw this story, it was earlier this week, or maybe it was on the weekend. It was basically along the lines of Valve bans 90,000 Dota 2 smurfs, and it's the funniest thing ever. This is from Forbes. It's written by Mike Stubbs, so please check out the article. Dota 2 is the second most played game on Steam, if you look at Steam charts. Super popular, especially super popular in Southeast Asia. Dota 2 is like a huge thing in Indonesia. I remember when I was studying Chinese full-time at National Kaohsiung University here in Kaohsiung, where Ed and I live, I had two Indonesian classmates and they were just like all into Dota and stuff. And that's when I heard how big Dota is in the Philippines as well. But yeah, so smurfing is the idea of when you lose games to lower your MMO, right? Or your MR, why did I say MMO, right? And that has been a huge thing. only thing I understood this concept was from Hearthstone. Hey, why am I playing against this guy? He has all these cards and I don't have these cards. And he has this sort of capability, right? And this, it really ruins the game for people. I'd love to hear Adam's take on this once I'm done, because to me, I experienced smurfing in Hearthstone all the time and it was irritating as hell. And I never did that. I never lost games purposely, and I don't understand the logic. Well, I guess I do understand the logic why people did it. I'm glad Valve has taken the stance. I hope other companies do it, that if you do have a Smurf account or if you are smurfing particularly, I've seen that in Marvel Snap, right? I've seen where people, I start a game, the guy just concedes automatically and I win, which doesn't really matter to me, but I know this is just people who want to go down, lower the MR, and then totally beat on some new people, and that ruins the experience. Data analytics and tracking has come a long way, and I hope more companies like Valve, like Second Dinner from Marvel Snap, like Blizzard Activision or Microsoft Blizzard Activision, clamp down on this. I'm sure it happens in Call of Duty as well and other multiplayer games. It shouldn't be acceptable. People should have some bans. Go and check out Adam's Xbox video about bans and policy and that sort of stuff. I think some of those ideas are really good. Ban someone in different ways until finally, if they keep on doing it, ban them for life. They should just ban them from playing that game because they're ruining this experience for hundreds or thousands of other people if you're playing continuously. But yeah, that is my story.
Is that because the way I've always understood smurfing is it's not lowering the level of your account. It's just creating an entirely new account. So you're a higher level player. You're somebody with a lot of experience. But what you're doing is you're creating an entirely new account so you look like a new player and then playing against new players with your higher skill level. But here it sounds like they're taking their regular accounts and then just basically lowering their elo until they're down to the level of lower characters.
What you described exactly is one way. And then for card games, for Dota, for other sorts of games, it's just purposely losing so that the online matchmaking system matches you with somebody who's just, oh my God, this is a wonderful Call of Duty game, and you just totally wipe out an entire game, become number one, right? Yeah.
It seems like an odd choice to me. I understand from a certain perspective the idea of having, I'm going to create a new account, I've got this high level, and I'm just going to dominate people at the lower level. But if you're lowering your account, you're losing matches, right? You're damaging, like the other way, you're not damaging your own account. You're creating a new account, and you're just taking advantage of it. But in this one, you're damaging your own, I don't know, account or reputation in a way in order to be able to do that. Seems an odd thing to do to me.
I agree with you. It comes down to the psychological, like maybe your life's terrible and you're not winning and you're like, yeah, I want to win. I want to be the number one. I remember being like number one in an Unreal Tournament server back in 2000 when I was living in the US, right? The feeling of being number one, yes, it sounds crazy to some of you non-gamers watching this on Instagram or Facebook at the moment. But yeah, for introverted people, right, that feeling of being a winner is actually really good. So I understand.
But you have to lose so many times to get to that point.
But it's like when you're conceding a match, there's no feeling, right? It's just you're logging in, you're hitting that I'm out button, I'm dead, I give up. Or you're just standing there, you're going out and you're getting a cup of coffee and you're letting people shoot you for 20 minutes and you don't care.
I don't know. It just seems to me odd that it's, oh, you don't care and that's why you're getting your level lowered. But then you do care because you're lowering it so you can, you know what I mean? I don't know. I don't understand the logic behind why people would do that.
It's like just selective. There's that psychology term. It's like selective. It's not selective amnesia, but it's just focusing on the end goal, the winning, and whatever you do to get there doesn't matter.
Yeah, but like, for instance, if you were playing like, say, a game like Apex or something like that, it's, oh, hey, I'm dominating these matches because I'm playing these really low level guys and I'm dominating it. Yeah, but look at your kill death ratio. You're tanking it so low just to be able to do that, that it's actually making you look worse, not better.
That end screen match, right, when it says Adam Gray wipes the floor with everybody, right? And you're like number one at the match. That's what matters, right?
I guess, but your stats say a completely different story, that you're actually way worse than you really are. Yeah, it sounds like a troll that you're just doing it to. I'm agreeing with Antoine, where it sounds like you're more troll. It's less about I'm doing it to make myself feel better, and I'm doing it more because I just want to ruin other people's experiences. And
that's definitely part of it.
And
that's,
I'm willing to sacrifice my own experience to do that.
Yeah, that's 100% the part of it. 100%, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Seems odd.
I've dealt with it just My primary experience has been with Hearthstone. It happened my first few years. Later on, like when I became better, it didn't happen anymore. But yeah, no, it sucks.
Yeah, to me, it just sounds less, I want to feel strong, and more like, I want to watch the world burn, and I want to watch everybody burn with me.
Yeah, that's the same, like those people who were like DOS Final Fantasy 16 servers or other game servers, right? Because they're like, oh my God, this sucks. You didn't do X or Z, or I hate these people, etc. Like, same thing.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Nice. I like that story. It was interesting. Let's move on to your second story.
All right. So my second story, and just as a heads up, you might want to do your second and third story together, because my third one isn't really so much a story as it is a question for a conversation. Antoine's over here saying he needs to download Starfield faster. But yeah. So basically what happened is Volition, which are the people behind, let me get my list out here. They were the people behind Saints Row, Red Faction, Summoner. Those are their biggest three. Descent, maybe you've heard of, or Free Space, or Agents of Mayhem, which I had heard of Agents of Mayhem, but I've never played it. Basically, they are being shut down. So what happened was, a while back, they were bought out by, Deep Silver, I believe. And then I guess Deep Silver was bought out by Embracer, or they were sold to Embracer. So anyway, they were bought out by Embracer, or the Embracer group. And now the Embracer group has come out and said, you know what? We're going to be shutting down Volition entirely. They're just gone forever. Yeah, which I believe in part was due to the most recent Saints Row releasing to not very exception. Good exception? I don't know how to word it in that particular case. But it did not release well. And therefore, they are being shut down completely. Now, their IPs, I don't know about all their IPs that they own, but I did see that Saints Row and Red Faction are going to be passed on to PlayOn. That's PlayOn, PlayOn. And if you've never heard of them before, it makes sense, because just last year, they changed their name. They used to be Koch Media, which you might have heard of. So that was Koch Media, and then they just last year changed their name to PlayOn. They are now PlayOn now, and they will be taking on all, or at least these two big IPs that Volition had. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen to the people that were working for them. I don't know if they're going to be redistributed to other companies within Embracer, but it does have a lot of people concerned, because it seems maybe Embracer's not entirely sure what they're doing with these IPs. And yeah, they spent all this money to get them up, and now it's not looking so good. Yeah,
I saw that news. That was terrible. I loved the Saints Row games. I was really sad about, like, when the new Saints Row is coming out, I'm like, this looks exciting. I'm glad I followed Antoine's rule of never buy a game before it's released, because the reviews did come out and it didn't look as good as what it used to be. And I'm like, okay. And then they came out like a few months ago, like, yeah, we're going to fix this. We're going to make it better. I guess it didn't work out, which is unfortunate. Adam, correct me if I'm wrong. Embracer owns Square Enix, right? Or
I don't know. That is a very good question. I'd have to look that up.
Oh, that's fine, because I know Embracer's had some sort of controversy or worry about them, because they are like a very much typical VC. Like there's another company that owns CNET, which is a very famous. Oh, yes.
No, Embracer was Square Enix recently sold off Eidos, which was the Tomb Raider company, and Embracer bought that. They bought a lot. So Square Enix sold off a lot of their studios, Crystal Dynamics, Eidos, and Square Enix Montreal, and Embracer bought those assets from them.
Yeah. There's been this trend in like big venture capital firms, private capital firms. They're like, okay, we're going to buy all of this, and then we're going to use it to make money in the worst possible way. And that's what's happened with CNET. If you're interested in that story, you can always DM me and I can tell you guys. But yeah, no, I'm not positive about Embracer and what they're going to do in the future when it comes to the IPs, to the employees. Again, their main goal is to make a better return than the S&P 500. So they should be looking for 20, 30% returns for their investors who get their money. It's unfortunate, but at the same time, I'm glad there are so many good games. If you follow the podcast the last 2 weeks, we've talked about Ratatouille, right? Which is another amazing opportunity. Raised more than $1 million, right? On Kickstarter. And that's great. And I think that paves the way for new IPs to come in and more IPs via Kickstarter, via other platforms. There are so many of them at the moment. So it's sad that some of these like really awesome IPs might actually go away because they just lost money or they didn't make enough money. But at the same time, it's good news because there are people out there in the world who are going to make some awesome, wonderful games, and we're going to get to play them.
We'll see.
Okay. Cool. All right, moving on to my second story. My second story is Xenoblade Chronicles. Again, I'll have to preface this. I have never played a Xenoblade Chronicles. I've had my Switch for 5 years, 6 years. I think just the year after it came out, I went to Japan and bought one. I've always wanted to play them. They've just never been on sale or at a price where I didn't want to buy something else. But why this story was really cool was like Xenoblade Chronicles is coming out with a potential, they're definitely coming up with a new game. All the other games did really well. So the thing that I like is that Xenoblade Chronicles, whatever the next version is going to be something apparently quite different from the existing game. So the existing games, and Adam can correct me if I'm wrong, his memory is much better, like action RPGs or turn-based RPGs, I'm not actually sure. I watched the trailer a little bit. I'm fairly sure it's an action RPG. But they are like the sort of mainstay RPG on the Switch. If you look up RPGs on the Switch, like Zelda will be number one, number two will be Xenoblade Chronicles. And I like the story as well because I think it's interesting that after three games, because Xenoblade Chronicles 3 came out last year, I believe, they finally said, yeah, we're going to do something different. And I think that's good. I think too many games get stuck in the sort of, this is what we're doing. We're making money. We don't need to change it because people are still paying money for this. And actually, I'll actually end this conversation and ask Adam. I remember Final Fantasy was a turn-based game, right? Why did they decide to go to an action RPG-esque scheme after so many years when the turn-based stuff was working, which is what I was always curious about?
There have been arguments for a couple of different reasons, but probably the most likely one is when Final Fantasy, when SquareSoft merged with Square Enix, SquareSoft had Final Fantasy, Square Enix had Dragon Quest, and the two games were very similar in the way that they played. They were both turn-based RPGs, and so they had an opportunity where they were like, hey, what we can do here is we can take our two franchises that are the biggest from each side, and since they're basically competing against each other in the same vein, how about we take one, stick to its roots, take the other one, experiment with it a little bit, take it, try to evolve it into something else. And Final Fantasy was the one that I guess they figured was the bigger IP or the more recognizable IP. Dragon Quest has always been really huge in Japan, but I don't think it was ever that big outside of Japan. Whereas Final Fantasy was a worldwide well-known IP. So they said, hey, why don't we just use the well-known IP to kind of branch out and try some new things with it. And I think that was part of it. And I think the other part of it was they were thinking, you know, we want to keep things, we don't want it to be this niche thing. We want it to be fresh. We want it to be modern. We want it to be on top of whatever the new hotness is. And so they've been trying to adapt it to be more in line with what's popular at the time. And action RPGs are clearly more popular right now. Just look at things like, say, The Witcher. And so I think on some level, they were thinking like, hey, let's try to make it like these other really big RPGs. And so they decided to go that direction with it. Yeah, but a lot of people do want them to return, but you'll see a lot of arguments where a lot of people don't want them to go back that. They're saying like, oh, that's outdated, that's old fashioned, and you have those games. Let's keep pushing forward with this. Let's keep trying new things. So, yeah, two schools of thought.
Where are you on the spectrum, though?